Good morning and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the FBN Holdings Full Year 2015 and Q1 2016 Financial Results Conference Call. Following the brief overview by FBN Holdings management team, an interactive Q&A session will be available. I would now like to hand the call over to Mr. U.K. Eke, Group Managing Director of FBN Holdings. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, and good morning, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Again, let me welcome you on behalf of the FBN Holdings PLC family to this analyst and investors conference call. The plan is to discuss our full year audited financial statements for the year ended 31st of December 2015, and also for the first quarter, 31st March 2016. I am joined on this call today by Dr. Shola Adebisi, the MD of FirstBank Nigeria Limited and its subsidiaries. I believe I speak for him if I say that we are glad and honored to lead our institutions at this time. We do appreciate the enormity of the challenges ahead of us, but we do believe that we have the capacity to execute our strategies. Also present on this call with me are the DMD of FirstBank, Gbenga Shobo, the MD of FBN Merchant Bank, Kayode Akinkugbe, the Head Finance, FBN Holdings, Wale Ariyibi, the Acting CFO of FirstBank Nigeria, Yinni Ebong, and I have the Head Investor Relations, Yemisi Lanre Phillips. I imagine you've had time to look through our presentation, so I'm going to run through very quickly and then open the lines for Q&A. I think we can maximize time in that segment. I'll go straight to slide five, where we have provided an overview of the operating environment and regulatory environment also. 2015, you will agree, witnessed reduction in aggregate domestic output on the back of depressed earnings from export of crude, which is the primary foreign exchange earner for the country. We also saw inflation go well above the central bank reference band of 6% to 9%. Of course, we continued to witness pressure on the naira equally. From the regulatory standpoint, we saw the TSA fully implemented. We also saw general provision requirement doubled from 1% to 2%. Of course, during 2015, there was an announcement on incremental capital requirement for SIBs, of which FirstBank Nigeria is one. I'll go straight to slide eight, where we have presented our footprint. What comes out from there is that we have a well-diversified franchise on the commercial banking front. We operate in six African countries. We are still quite active in London and, of course, in Paris with three rep offices. Now, slide nine speaks to how the business of FBN Holdings is configured, our main operating entities. What is clear is that from geographical and sectoral perspective, we are a well-diversified investment holding company. You will notice that for the first time, we are featuring FBN Merchant Bank, the standalone. We commenced business effectively 2nd of November 2015. So 2016 will be the first full year of operations. You also notice on the insurance side that we have included FBN General Insurance Limited. We acquired Oasis, and 2016 will also be its first full year of operations. Interestingly, by way of footnotes, we have disclosed that we sold our microfinance bank 31st of December. We concluded the sale. So the results of microfinance are not consolidated in our 2015 group numbers. So with that as the background, I will quickly run to slide 12, where you see our income statement and balance sheet snapshots. clearly, we recorded impressive volumes with respect to gross earnings. We attained 505 billion, which remains the highest in the industry for 2015. However, we took an impairment charge of 119 billion, which obviously led to a significant reduction in our profit before tax from 94 billion to 21.5 for full year 2015. That is linked to the very adverse macro conditions which we operated under during 2015. Now, in spite of that, we also took benefit of our diversification across sectors and received dividends from our other operating companies, and on that basis, the HoldCo is able to pay dividend at 16 kobo per share. With regards to 2016 Q1, we saw gross earnings drop 15% year on year to 107.5 billion, and our operating income came in at 85.5 billion, slightly lower than prior year. However, we also took additional impairment charges for the first quarter of 2016 at about 12.8 billion naira, resulting in profit before tax of 22.1 billion for the quarter. I would mention also that our NPL ratio inched up to 21.5 for the quarter. With respect to cost to income ratio, we have continued to improve quarter on quarter. You will notice that at the end of 2014, we had attained 66.5% cost to income ratio. We made a pledge, we're going to stay focused on efficiency. We're able to progress to 65.1 in Q1 of 2015, and we improved further at the end of the year to 61.4. So we closed cost to income ratio at 61.4% for 2015. We continue with that trend and achieve further reduction in cost to income ratio, closing at 59.4% for Q1 of 2016. On capital, we believe that we are sufficiently capitalized with respect to the commercial banking group. At the group level, 19%, at the standalone level for the bank itself, 17.1%, and that improved slightly to 17.2% for Q1 2016. Now, if you consider the other entity that carries capital for operations, that's the Merchant Bank, we continue to operate at very high capital levels, 24-25% for 2015 and 2016 Q1. As things stand now, and for emphasis, we do not think that there is pressure on us to raise capital. We don't have any immediate plans to raise additional capital to continue with our modest growth that we are planning for 2016. So from a need and market conditions perspective, we are not looking to raise capital in the short term. With respect to cost of funds, we closed at 3.7% at the year end from a peak of 4% 2015. And this reflects, obviously, this is a reflection of the interest rate environment we operated under. Our funding cost, however, declined further to 2.3% in the first quarter of 2016. Overall, on a blended average yield on interest-earning asset basis, we saw an improvement to 12.1% from 11.3% for 2014. Now, it's interesting to observe how we have held our NIM stable. We closed at 8.1% for 2015 full year and maintained that level, 8.1% first quarter of 2016. For the record, at the end of December 2014, the NIM we will close at 7.6%. So this obviously shows that we have a sustainable business model that we are pushing on in the market. I'm on 24 right now, just trying to give you our standpoint, looking at our strategic intent. We've identified three areas to focus on based on how we closed last year. The first will be a complete overhaul and resetting of our risk management framework, focusing clearly on people, process, and policy with a view to achieving above average returns when we close 2016. We do think that we need to emphasize the culture of ownership and accountability. We also think that from the standpoint of customer selection, origination of underwriting or credit, and finally to remediation and collection, there's a whole lot of work we need to do there to improve our standards. So this is a commitment we're giving, and we also believe that with the active execution of our enterprise risk management initiative and enterprise planning, resource planning initiative, we're going to obviously up our standards and be able to use technology to drive our operations, particularly in the risk management function. Now, the second area we believe we'll have to focus on is efficiency. We've identified areas that will give us quick wins with respect to cost, and like I said previously, we've seen sufficient progress in that regard, dropping our cost-to-income ratio to as low as 59.4%. We do think that there's a whole lot more we can do to further improve our ratios. Of course, capital efficiency will still be an issue for us, and we do think that we can achieve a whole lot with respect to efficiency. Finally, with respect to the third area we're going to focus on, we think that we've got a huge platform. We've got a large network of branches. We've got a large network of ATMs and POS terminals, and therefore we shall be leveraging the infrastructure we have built over time to gain competitive advantage. This is a retail bank, and we need to play to our strength. We see clear opportunities in digital services, in transaction banking, and therefore we are reversing, as it were, or modifying our business model so that it becomes transaction and services-led rather than credit-led. So a whole lot will happen with respect to leveraging technology for transaction volumes and moving our NIR. We also see opportunities in the insurance space as much as we see in merchant banking and asset management division. You know that Nigeria is grossly underpenetrated when it comes to insurance, and we are combining banking with insurance, and hopefully NICOM will release the final guidelines for the bank assurance, and we'll be able to leverage the retail infrastructure to grow our numbers in that regard. We also see significant funding gaps, particularly from the national government and sub-nationals, creating opportunity for our merchant bank and asset management divisions to gain competitive advantage. Basically, I will run through slide 30, where we have detailed how we see 2016 playing out. The overarching objective, basically, is to return value to shareholders. We did say that when we first wrote to the shareholders and analysts at the beginning of the year. What we believe is that we need to simplify our areas of focus so we can achieve our near and long-term objectives. Essentially, we shall be optimizing available capital to ensure that we meet regulatory requirements and drive modest growth during 2016. The conditions are not right for capital raising at this time, so we have to be measured in our growth and ensure that we maintain solvency in businesses that need capital. Second point would be to improve our processes and overhaul the risk management architecture completely and ensure we do not have another cycle of high impairment charges for 2016. Of course, we are embarking on active remediation and recovery exercise driven by the board and, of course, management. The third is group coordination. We are a financial holding company, and therefore we should be mindful of synergies that are bound across the business entities. From the revenue and cost perspectives, we do think we can extract major synergies and also limit the cost base of the group companies. Again, like I said before, with 11 million customers, robust IT platform, and also diversified business operations, we do think that we've got strong capacity to deliver on the numbers that we are projecting. We would continue to pursue disciplined cost containment efforts and ensure that the commitment we are making with respect to cost-to-income ratio, which is important on cost efficiency, are achieved. We think that we are ready to take on the market. We will focus on cleaning up the books, as we have started already, and we do think that given the strength of the institution and the diversity of our offerings, we should be able to deliver the guidance numbers we have proposed on slide 30, starting from deposit growth all the way down to the return on average equity, as we have listed on slide 30. So I think with that, I will request the operator to open the lines for Q&A. Thank you very much.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. A voice prompt on your phone line will indicate when your line is open. And if you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will pause now for just a moment to allow everyone to signal. Thank you. So our first question today comes from Ola Ogosalia of RenCap. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking this call. My name is Olami Kogun, so I'm calling from Minister Capital. I actually have a number of questions. So firstly, can you please run us through what sectors drove the sharp growth in NPLs, both in full year and first quarter of 2016, and why these loans were suddenly classified? Also, if you could please provide an update on Atlantic Energy. So has any of this, you know, have any provisions been made on the name? And with coverage ratio below 40%, what's management's medium to long, short to medium term guidance for coverage, and what sort of cost of risk should we be expecting to get to this target? Also, I'd like to know how management intends to address capital situation. I guess you mentioned there'll be no capital raise in the short term, but it's difficult to imagine that you still think you don't need Tier 1 capital, given how high NPLs are, and also considering that these NPLs are not adequately covered. And also in terms of dividend payment, so I understand that this came from the holdco. So how much cash is sitting at the holdco level after you account for dividend payment?
Okay, I mean, thank you, Ola, for your question. Regarding the key drivers of provisions in Q4, you remember that already in Q3, our cost of risk went up, which essentially was as a result of the review of the entire portfolio that was being conducted. So, in terms of signaling, okay, my name is Shola Adenus, I'm the CEO of First Bank Nigeria. Just by way of identification. So to go back to my comment, in Q3, you recall that our impairment charges already went up, which and we did mention the fact that there were certain challenges to the portfolio. And what we did during the course of Q4 was to do a full review of the portfolio, and that necessitated the need for us to classify certain names and also ensure that we take appropriate provisions in line with the IFRS. So mainly that was all happened. And again, to go to your question on Atlantic Energy, it's still work in progress. We are currently going through documentation with all the parties involved, and specifically we've taken some degree of provisions or impairment on Atlantic Energy. Indeed, part of the reason why the coverage ratio appear a bit low is the fact that you pull into the NPL base one or two names that are fairly big from a exposure perspective, but for which we've taken, for want of a better word, a minimalist kind of a provision because of the status of remediation where we are. And Atlantic Energy is actually one of those names. We are pretty advanced in terms of where we are in terms of remediation. And indeed, if the remediation process is successful for the two big names, we expect that our coverage ratio should go back to approximately 100%.
Okay, there are two questions I need to take. One on capital situation and two dividend payments, which you raised. Let me repeat that we have an obligation to ensure solvency across all the operating entities. And as we speak, all the operating entities needing capital are well capitalized, well above the regulatory requirements. Second point to make is we know that this year the macro does not support very aggressive business expansion, and therefore, even as we have guided to 3 to 5% loan growth, other risk-weighted assets obviously would, we have sufficient capital to drive our business at the pace we want to drive it. That said, each of the entities that need regulatory capital have implemented the internal capital adequacy assessment process, and that means that it's evaluated by the board of those entities on a quarterly basis, and should the need arise, they would raise their capital requirements with the holdco that would then have the burden to raise capital. We are saying that the market conditions do not conduce as we speak for any capital raising, and therefore we need to be mindful of how we can deploy the capital that we have at this time. Should there be any need by any of the operating entities to raise capital, we can exercise the options that are available to us clearly, and it's not limited to just going to the capital market. We have other options we can look at. Now, with respect to dividend payments, yes, the dividend payment was obviously done by the holding company, and that's to be expected. The holding company is an investment holding company, not an operating entity. So what we do is to receive dividends from our operating entities, and insurance, FBN Capital upstreamed dividends to us as expected. We also had profits from sale of our microfinance. All of those were pulled into HOLCO, and since we have a primary obligation to distribute dividends to the ultimate shareholders, we have no need to retain capital or excess liquidity at the HOLCO level. So it is to be expected that the surplus funds we hold that we don't need will have to be distributed to the shareholders, and that's what we did. We are paying 15 kobo, about 150% higher than we paid for 2014, and that's to reward shareholders for their loyalty.
Okay, thank you. But my first question was more around what sectors drove the growth in NPL. And also, as a follow-up question, so how much of Atlantic Energy has been provided for?
Again, I won't be able to provide specific information on Atlantic Energy because of client confidentiality. I think it's sufficient for this purpose to say it's a classified name and appropriate provision has been taken in line with the IFRS. In terms of the sector, it's a bit diffuse. We have around the downstream oil sector. We've always had exposures in telecoms. So real estate, and I think those are basically the main areas. Downstream sector, real estate, and then upstream, actually, also upstream. So those are the key areas where incremental impairment charges were taken.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question today now comes from Lanre Valoro of Primera. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thanks for the call. A similar question to the earlier question. Signals. I mean, after 9 months, and the guidance were quite very conservative. I mean, you were still guiding for a cost of risk of around 3.5%, an NPL of 5%. What really happened? What turned around within the fourth quarter to the kind of spike that we saw for the full year? And also, I mean, you quite highlighted, you know, your changes around risk management. I mean, specifically, what are you doing different now from, say, 6 months ago? Quite curious to know, I mean, is it a complete overhaul of the team? Are you bringing in new people in place to really streamline and have a more robust risk management desk? And also, finally, in regards to, you definitely addressed the Atlantic energy situation. On your presentation, you mentioned some reclassification of an oil and gas exposure to government. Can you really give us some color on what this exposure is and just the parameters around this restructuring? And one more question, Orlando, what's the exposure and what kind of risk to your book is Orlando right now? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I mean, I've answered the first part of your question in responding to question one. We said when we saw the rapid deterioration in Q3 in the portfolio, we carried out a very detailed analysis and review and re-evaluation of the portfolio. And that was actually what necessitated the increase in both the NPL and the impairment charges that came out as a result of our assessment. And that was what prompted the profit warning. And that's where we are. So that's that. On the reclassification between oil and gas and government portfolio, there were certain exposures to IOTs that involved both international banks and Nigerian banks. Those obligations were subsequently taken over by the National Oil Company, and which qualifies them to be public sector exposure. And that was actually the major driver of that reclassification. In terms of what are the key changes that we have made as far as the risk management is concerned, we did mention in the opening remarks that this for us is a very comprehensive review and revamping of the entire credit risk process. So we are looking at people, process, policy, and the technology. So today we are in the market to hire a new chief risk officer. We are looking at a number of functions. We've changed the number of people within the directorate. Equally important is the fact that we have KPMG Professional Services. The risk consulting arm of KPMG is working with us in terms of strengthening the process. We just completed the diagnostic review in terms of where we are today, what are the gaps, and we are working very hard to close those gaps. From a technology perspective, we have approval of the board, and we are currently implementing the Oracle Enterprise Risk Management Solution. And what this does for us is help us to pull everything in the right direction. We've actually depicted what we are doing more graphically on slide 26 of our presentation. For us, it's a wholesale review, starting almost from customer acquisition, customer selection, and customer profiling, all the way down to credit analysis, transaction structuring, monitoring of those exposures, and when and indeed, because it's expected in the ordinary course of business that there will be one or two challenge facilities, how do you remediate, and if you need to go into recovery, how do you do that? Part of what we've also done in the last few months is we've strengthened the remedial capacity within the bank. We've also strengthened the recovery capacity within the bank. So it's a whole gamut of changes, and our commitment as a new management is to ensure that we break this cycle of the institution having high NPL and cost of risk on a going forward basis. So that is our mandate, and that is the commitment we are giving to the investing community.
Okay, that's a quick recap again on the dividend payout. So if I understand, you're saying the whole code, the CBN guidelines on dividend payouts in regards to high NPLs and the risk level of the bank does not apply to a holdco?
This is UK, GMD. The bank is a regulated entity here with respect to dividend payouts and restrictions. And the circular says that when you have NPL above 5%, you can't remit dividend or you can't pay dividend. And therefore, we did not receive dividend from the commercial banking group. No, we did not. The dividend we are paying came from the other operating entities. And of course, I had also mentioned that we made a profit on sale of one of our subsidiaries, the microfinance. So there is no restriction on holding company in terms of paying dividend from other operating companies.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Our next question today now comes from Ronak Gadia of Equitix. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the presentation and taking my question. My first question is on your restructuring. On your presentation, you mentioned you restructured some loans. Can you just highlight what the key restructuring terms are, specifically within the oil and gas sector, what the break-even oil price you've used for the restructured loans? The second question is on your capital. I see that there's a pretty big shift in your capital allocation from statutory reserves to retained earnings. Can you just talk briefly about that? Because I would have thought in an environment like this, Nigerian GAAP provisioning would have been much higher than IFRS. So if anything, your statutory provisioning would have increased. And if that $40 billion transfer hadn't happened, then your capital adequacy ratio would have been a bit lower. And then as per the previous call, can you just clarify what your exposure is to Oando and how that exposure is classified? Thank you.
Let me start by commenting on the prudential provisions in line with the Central Bank Prudential Guidelines and provisions under the International Financial Reporting Standards. The reality is, at the end of the day, you're looking at the same portfolio. At a particular point in time, there could be misalignment between the two requirements, in which case one particular framework is ahead of the other one. What has happened in the course of 2015, because we've been quite aggressive in recognition of impairment charges, is that there was a firm alignment between the provisions required under IFRS and the provisions required under the CBN Prudential Guidelines. So once we took everything that was required under IFRS, which were taken through the P&L, and that was sufficient even when the portfolio was subjected to evaluation under the CBN Prudential Guidelines, there was no need to keep the statutory credit reserve any longer. So basically, that was what happened, and that was why the statutory credit reserve was released and is now a part and parcel of the retained earnings. In terms of the restructuring in the oil and gas sector, the major terms of restructuring are typically around the tenor, in which case most of the tenors have been elongated to take account of the fact that the price of crude has dropped and the volume of crude that is now required to repay those facilities is higher, and you now need to push the tenor much longer. In terms of the base, the pricing that has been used is about 35. We think that's the pricing that has been used. The low is 35. So that's the underlying pricing that has been used for the purpose of restructuring.
The other part of the question?
On Ando, again, we have to respect customer bank relationship here. It's a name that we are monitoring very closely, but I'm not allowed to be able to disclose on a call what my relationship with specific obligors are. But I can assure you, it's a name that's under our radar screen and we are managing very closely.
Okay. Just a couple of follow-up questions. I mean, Nigerian GAAP requires you to make 100% provision if a loan is non-performing for more than 1 year. So assuming some of these big NPLs are non-performing because the remedial action isn't concluded immediately, does that mean you'll then have to reclassify or transfer some reserves from retained earnings to statutory reserves? And with regards to the restructuring, like you said, you've elongated the the duration of some of these loans, but what kind of problem will that create when your long-term bonds start to mature?
Let me take the first question around the Nigerian gap. The portfolio is an ongoing, it's always subjected to review on an ongoing basis. And if you mentioned, if you remember when we spoke about what it is that we are doing differently during the course of 2016, we mentioned the fact that we are strengthening our remediation capacity and our recovery capacity. So what that does is that we're working very hard on these names that have been classified, and we are reasonably optimistic that a fair amount of names that have been classified would move back, or will move out of the NPL portfolio, and they will move back into the performing portfolio. Again, it's an ongoing evaluation of the portfolio in line with requirements. With regards to your second question, in terms of long-term funding, our funding, we do see have access to the market. We do not believe that in the short to medium term we are going to have any liquidity challenges. The market is open to us. We continue to engage with our lenders, and we continue to also generate the required cash flow to meet our obligations. And you also need to look at the tenor of our existing Tier 2 bonds. They are pretty long-term, far extended. I think the first maturity is sometimes in the course of 2018, and that gives us ample time to build up the required cash flow to meet the maturing obligation.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question today comes from Konstantin Rozanov of JP Morgan. Please go ahead, your line is now open.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I had a few questions. So my first question, could you please elaborate more on how concentrated is the NPL stock at the moment? And also, I would like to know maybe some details on the specific names constituting this NPL stock. What are the gross amounts of these exposures and how well they are provisioned?
Okay, let me, I can speak through the concentration of the NPL portfolio, although I'm not, I won't be able to provide you with name by name analysis. The top 20 NPL constitutes about 85% of the non-performing loan portfolio. And this constitutes both an advantage and a disadvantage. It's an advantage to the extent that if you remediate one or two of them, it does have material impact positively on the NPL portfolio, and that is actually where we've been deploying our resources, our remediation resources. We think the fact that the NPL is relatively concentrated gives us an opportunity for a rapid resolution of most of those issues. It's not very diffuse and very well concentrated. And in terms of industry segments, it's essentially around upstream and downstream portfolios.
Sure, thank you. So how well provisioned are these exposures? Could you please specify?
Again, we've mentioned that we report under IFRS, and so adequate provisions have been made under the IFRS requirements.
Okay, thank you. The final question I had is on capital ratio minimum. Could you please elaborate what is the regulatory minimum for the bank? I see that the most recent figure is 17.2% for the end of Q1.
The minimum capital required for the bank is 15% as we speak today. There's a plan for an additional 1% to be added over and above that, effective 1st of July 2016, for systemically important banks. Today, the capital adequacy position of the bank is at 17.2%. So, whether you're looking at 15 or you're looking at 16, the bank has adequate capital to meet the business obligations.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next questions today now come from Marina Vlasenko of Pioneer Investments. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello. I just have two little questions to follow up after what colleagues already have asked. So in your restructured portfolio of 12% of the gross loans, which part is actually recorded as NPLs? And the other question, provided that the two big loans you are referring to are not recovering by the end of the year, what kind of level of coverage you would expect to achieve?
Can you repeat your first question again? We get his second question, but the first question was not clear.
Yes. From the 12% restructured loans, which part is actually recorded as NPLs?
Okay. For the first part of your question, let's come back to you. We don't have that information readily available. But in terms of your second question, we've mentioned the fact that we're working aggressively in terms of remediation and recovery. But over and above that is the fact that we do generate significant or sufficient current year earnings that enables us to be able to absorb any shortfall in the provision as required.
So what level of coverage ratio do you think would you like to achieve by the end of the year, provided that the two big loans, which do not require high provisions, are not recovering?
I mean, like I said, at any particular point in time, because we report under IFRS, what we always aim to do is to ensure that our provision is fully in line with the requirements of IFRS. So whatever you see, wherever you see, it lands us in terms of coverage. Coverage is like secondary. The primary thing is compliance with the requirements of IFRS in terms of provision. And I'm sure you are quite familiar with all the inputs into that entire provisioning process.
Yeah, it's just a little bit kind of contradictory, because what you are saying is that your NPLs peaked, right? And they are going down right now. At the same time, your cost of risk is... expected cost of risk is higher than the cost of risk for first quarter. So you are kind of aiming to increase cost of risk, right? This is why I'm just trying to understand, why are you planning to increase it if the NPLs are going down and you think they are now adequately provisioned?
Again, I go back to part of my responses earlier on. The process, the loan provisioning process, is an ongoing process of appraising and reappraising your portfolio. And at any particular point in time, you also need to factor in the fact that you create different scenarios for your planning process. You make certain assumptions in terms of what you think you may be able to remediate, and if you are not able to remediate, what level of cost of risk are you dealing with? You won't be overly optimistic to the extent that your guidance to the market is completely out of whack with reality. So it's a delicate balancing, looking at your assumptions around remediation and your assumptions around incremental impairment that is required. So you have to balance the two. If you are unable to remediate, you need to be prepared to take incremental provision. And that is what has gone into the scenario, and that's what has gone into the guidance number. Indeed, if you look at slide 19, one of the bullet points there actually provided some guidance around what I'm saying.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question today now comes from Ola Marakuru of SBG Securities. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello, thank you very much for the presentation. I have a few questions. My first question, in regards to your upstream oil and gas exposure, what does management think is different with other large banks that have much lower NPL ratio in the sector? My second question, regarding electronic banking fees, is it possible to split the electronic banking fees into cards and online banking fees? And what is management's ideal level of FCY to total loans level? How much of the loans are to businesses generating FCY revenues at the moment? Thank you very much.
The first part of your question relating to our upstream exposure, again, we are not privy to the portfolio of other institutions. We've taken our own situation and we've basically evaluated our portfolio, and that was what informed the decisions that we have taken from an impairment and from an NPL perspective. So again, each institution have their own peculiarities and they have their own risk and tolerance threshold. We do not currently have the split between for our e-business revenue. We'll provide it to you shortly during the course of this call.
Okay, thank you. The other questions I had was regarding the ideal level of FCY loans to total loans, and how much of the loans are to businesses generating, how much of loans are to businesses generating FCY revenues. Then one additional question, I would like for management to elaborate on the material increase in interest expenses from banks. Average rate is around 12% when compared to published interbank rates in 2015. Thank you.
The ideal situation for us would be to have a 70 to 30% split between local currency exposure and foreign currency exposure. We are not there today because there were, in 2014, 2013, there were one-off opportunities in terms of oil and gas that the bank, given what we stand for, decided to support. But in the ordinary course of business, as things pans out, our ideal loan book structure will be 70 to 30 from a local currency and foreign currency distribution perspective. In terms of entities generating foreign currency cash flow, we think about 80% of our, 80-85% of our, of the exposures today are to entities that generate foreign currency cash flows.
Can we have the next question, please?
Certainly. The next question comes from Lanre Baluro of Primera. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. I guess you've answered the Owando question, but this one of the key initiatives you're looking to drive revenue, the credit card business. Can you walk us through how you're planning to, you know, generate income from that, given the weakened economic state right now? I mean, who are you issuing the cards to? Are they salary? Are they cash backed? What's the parameters around this particular product? And also on the e-channels, for a bank with about, you know, the largest customer base, about 10 million, you know, the income you're making compared to your peers, at least it's of the two tier one banks, is quite low. What's the difference, or what are you doing that they're, I mean, that, you're not doing that they're doing? That'll be it. Thank you.
Let me take the second question first on e-channels and the revenue from there. That is actually one of the biggest areas of our focus in the current year. We will push very aggressively on our digital banking business and cards. For us, part of the strategic shift that we are going through as a bank is to make this bank to be a transaction-led institution rather than a credit-led institution. So what we are going to be seeing from us in the months ahead is a significant push of our digital banking and e-business type product and transactions. And given our footprint, given our customer base, and even given our customer base aspirations going into the future, we believe this clearly is at the epicenter of what we're trying to achieve as the new leaders of the bank. So you will see a big push around our e-business offering, and we believe in the fullness of time, this will also cascade down in terms of the level of revenue that we'll be generating going forward. For credit cards, for us, we are issuing our credit cards to top-notch customers, most of them employed with blue-chip companies. The risk assessment criteria around the credit cards are well-defined. The loss norm that we have seen over time is quite low, and we are pretty comfortable that that this is a product. In fact, indeed, we think we've operated it in a very, very conservative manner. And one of the things we are hoping to do is expand the base without necessarily losing the controls and the risk management policy processes that we have deployed around the card business. In terms of your question on restructuring, 61% of the restructured loans are actually part of the NPL. So the portion of the restructured loans that are within the performing portfolio is actually less than 40%. It's about 39%. So a significant chunk of the restructured loans have actually been classified today, and we are going through the process of remediation and recovery on the name.
I just wanted to speak further to Lambert's question on revenue generation, and to remind us that FBN Holdings goes beyond the commercial bank, and therefore we've got the merchant bank franchise, and we've also got the insurance. We did say that currently the merchant bank has sufficient capital, it's about 25%, and therefore they can put their balance sheet to play even when they do advisory services. We did say that there's going to be a whole lot of bond issuance, even from the national and subnational. We do think there will be a whole lot that will happen around asset management. We do think that insurance business represents for us a major revenue source, because this market is grossly underpenetrated, and we're working with one of the best names out of South Africa, that is Sanlam. So in terms of product development and diversification, we do think that there's an opportunity to gain market share. We have leapfrogged from number 15 in life business to number 2 at the end of the year. And we have a license right now to do general insurance. So clearly, we have a diversified revenue base to augment what the commercial banking business is also generating. Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question today comes from Jason Uy of Macquarie. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for your time today. I wanted to ask you about a point that I saw on slide 19, which was on the personal loans against salaries. I suppose the reason that this stuck out to me was because it's a bit of a concern when the government stops paying its own employee salaries. So I wanted to ask, you know, how much of the loan book is actually these PLAS loans, what the NPL ratio is, and do you have any background on, like, which agency the government suspended salaries to, how long it's been going on for, when these employees are expected to get paid again? Thank you.
Thank you. The second question, what was it again, please?
I'm sorry.
The second question, can you please repeat the second question, please? I think you were talking about which agencies suspended salary, is that correct?
Yeah, I just wanted a bit more color on, which agency the government suspended salaries to, how long they've been suspended for, when the employees are expected to start receiving their salaries again, and on top of that, sort of how much of your loan book are actually these PLAS loans, and what the NPL ratio is.
The total portfolio of PLAS in our books today is about 115 billion. You can see that on slide 18. Again, it's very important to highlight the fact that PLAS as a product is not just to public sector employees. It actually is a product that we have offered successfully to salary staff of all our major customers. So the portion of it that is exposed to government employees is the majority of the exposure is actually not to government employees. That's number one. What is equally important is that even though there have been delays in the payment of...
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll now continue with a question from Jason Uy of Macquarie. Speakers, please go ahead. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Continue with our explanations around the question on PLAS. And one fundamental point, I mean, I've made a point that the total exposure is by 115 billion, but that exposure is to staff of both public and private sector customers. However, the majority, a significant majority of their exposure is actually to customers, to salaries, to staff of our customers in the private sector. The public sector customers, by virtue of their salary earnings, don't actually have a very big limit or very big headroom to take on salary loans. So when you look at this 115 billion, a significant chunk actually belongs to people that work in the private sector. Even when you look at the public sector employees, the problem or the challenges have always been in the sub-sovereign, which are the state governments. But what we've also seen is that they are delayed, but ultimately they get cleaned up. With the federal government, we haven't seen any major delays, but with the sub-sovereign, they are delayed, but ultimately it gets cleaned up. So you could have 2-3 months delay, but ultimately it gets cleaned up. Don't also forget that during the course of last year, the federal government indeed bailed out the state, and what that did is it basically improved the fiscal position of the state. And just this month, the federal government again gave another lifeline to the state, which allows them to receive more cash proceeds from the federation account. And this typically trickles down to their staff by way of payment of staff salary. In the short run, we've actually in this top class, especially as far as it relates to public sector employees.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, to ask a telephone question, you may do so by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. That's star 1 for any telephone question. We'll now move to our next question today. This comes from Toshin Ojo of Cardinal Stone Partners. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the presentation. I joined the call a little bit late, so I will apologize if some of these questions have been answered. The first is on your exposure to Atlantic Energy. Earlier this year, around February, there was news that another party is going to take over the exposure to the lenders, and we confirmed from the investor relations team that the terms are that about 53% of them will be paid, and the balance restructured over 24 months. So I want to get an update on that. As that initial sum, has it been paid, and what the current terms of restructuring for the balance? Second question is on Rwanda exposure. Just for analysis' sake, can I have an idea of what percentage Rwanda exposure is relative to your total oil and gas and portfolio. Then I noticed also that your downstream, in the Q1 non-performing loan breakdown, downstream exposure is about 39%, and that's like the biggest, actually, higher than upstream exposure. And we know there's been a problem with the upstream side because of low oil price, and midstream. It's quite unclear what the specific problems you're encountering with the downstream exposure. So I'd just like to have clarity on your downstream non-performing loans. What sort of exposure do you have? What are the causes of the non-performance? What sort of obligors in terms of quality? What sort of collateral do you have? Are they secured or unsecured? That's regarding your downstream non-performing loan exposure. And then the last question really is just more qualitative, just to get a sense of what to expect from this new management. Part of the challenges that First Bank has probably had would be the influence of related party and exposure to related and related party exposures and transactions. So I just want to get a sense of how he means the current management to be such transactions and places, and what level of confidence should we have, you know, in First Bank as an institution going forward. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'll take your question. We, like you indeed mentioned, virtually all the questions you have have been dealt with earlier on, but I will try and paraphrase our responses. On Atlantic Energy, we've actually admitted the fact that the remediation process has been slower than we thought, but it's still a work in progress, and we are quite we are reasonably optimistic that we would eventually close out on this remediation process. We indeed did mention the fact that we've taken some level of impairment on Atlantic Energy. So that's as far as Atlantic Energy is concerned. On Orlando, what we've pleaded is that we would like to respect customer bank relationship confidentiality, and so we'll be unable to disclose specific terms in terms of our relationship with Orlando. But just to mention the fact that our exposure to Orlando is not overtly big, so it's actually nothing to it's not one of the key things that will keep management awake at night in terms of size and potential impact. In terms of downstream exposure, again, we provided clarification around this. Each entity, each bank, we're in different situations. You do have different obligors. We've evaluated our exposure to certain of our obligors, and we have the view that it's prudent at this particular point in time to take some degree of impairment while you go through the process of remediation. A number of them do have collateral, but again, when you realize that for the purpose of the downstream, for the most part, the collateral that typically supports the downstream business is because they are typically trade transactions, so the collateral typically is around the goods that are being financed, but a number of them also have some tangible collateral. But we are dealing with this, we are remediating them, and then it's part of the key focus for the new management to remediate them as much as possible. In terms of what should be your expectation of new management, again, we've demonstrated what is possible. We've been very open. We've been very transparent in terms of what we're doing. We signaled correctly when we felt that there was deterioration in the loan book, and that was what necessitated the profit warning. And if you look at the level of impairment we've taken in this audited financial statement for 2015, indeed, even what we are taking in Q1, it suggests that clearly that this is one management that is keen to have a clean book. We've also covered extensively what it is that we are doing in terms of strengthening our credit risk management process going forward, which for us is the more important part of the whole thing to ensure how do we ensure that we do not have a repeat performance of this. If you go to the presentation that was circulated, I think specifically on slide, there's a slide slide 26, where we is very we articulated very clearly and profusely what it is that we are doing in terms of remediating and revamping the credit risk management process. We are looking at it end to end, people, process, policy, and technology. And we are not going to leave any stone untouched as far as revamping that process is concerned. We indeed also mentioned there, and I'm sure you have picked it up from the press, that we indeed have just appointed a new executive director in charge of corporate banking, and that is part of the strengthening the process. Because for us, we are looking at it, not just even the credit analysis, we are looking at it right from the onset in terms of customer acquisition, customer profiling, who and who do you even deal with in the first instance. We are in the market today to recruit a new CRO, and then again, the same criteria, world-class experience, world-class skill set, because for us, we are very clear on where we want to be, how we will get there, and the nature and the character of people that is required to deliver the kind of results that we anticipate going forward.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question today now comes from Nisrin Halal of SMBC. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Hi, it's actually David Ashley from SMBC. Thank you very much for your presentation. For two questions, what percentage of your NPLs are related to foreign currency loans and lending? And my second question is, how are you meeting your foreign currency liquidity obligations? Thank you.
Let me start by answering your second question. Today, this bank, we are meeting our foreign currency obligations. Indeed, just like every other bank in Nigeria today, there are challenges with foreign currency liquidity, but this bank has not defaulted on any foreign currency obligation. We continue to ensure that we have the right level of liquidity. The market is still open to us, the correspondent banks, have faith and confidence in this bank and our customers too. So in terms of meeting our foreign currency obligations, this bank is doing that within the ambit of where the market is today. There has been no single default in terms of meeting our foreign currency obligations. We currently don't have the split of the NPL by currency, but I'm sure during the course of the call, before we wrap it up, we'll have it readily available. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question now comes from Kayode Tanuye of United Capital. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Okay, good afternoon. Thank you for the call. I have a few questions. In terms of your loan growth expectation, which sectors do you expect to drive your 3 to 5% loan growth target for 2016? Then my second question has to do with your cost reduction strategies. Can you just provide a bit more color what specifics you're looking at for 2016 in terms of, I mean, if you can provide a quarterly run rate, that would be fantastic. Then, lastly, the last question has to do with your remedial actions. What kind of target are you looking at for 2016 in terms of the number that you're looking to recover going forward?
Okay. Thank you, Kaode. I think the first point that we need to emphasize is that this bank will continue to maintain a very low to moderate loan growth, again, in line with the macro situation. But having said that, we believe that we have opportunities from manufacturing, especially the high-end manufacturing, because part of what we are trying to do is to ensure that we lend and we lend safely to customers with very good credit rating, top-notch rating. So the chunk of the growth will come from that side. We are also looking at short-term self-liquidating trade-related transactions that cycle out very quickly, where we don't have any build-up of exposures that may lead to NPL. So, broadly speaking, those are the two key areas where we want to be able to deploy our credit headroom during the course of the year. In terms of cost reduction, again, this is a very key area of focus for us. We are looking at, we've mentioned the fact that we have restructured our procurement function, and we have actually, what we've done basically, we've separated the needing function from the buying function, and we've relocated the procurement function to the CFO directorate, such that there's an alignment with the goal of the executive that has a mandate to bring down our costs. So from general procurement, we're expecting significant savings. We are also doing realignment of staff in terms of how our staff have been relocated. We've mentioned earlier on in the call that we're also implementing enterprise resource planning system, enterprise risk management system, and what is the capability this gives to the bank is we are able to automate and use technology to do a number of things that we use EdScans to do today. App top of the level analysis suggests that we can reduce the cost of running our middle office by close to 20-30% if we implement the ERM and the ERP solutions successfully. So that's another key area. We're also looking at reducing the overall cost of running the institution from a power generation. So a lot of attention has also gone into how we procure diesel and how we use diesel, and also the number of hours by which our various branches are hub in terms of making use of diesel. Part of what we are also working on in the medium term is actually our shared services scheme. Where we have today is that we created a central processing center, and we are centralizing transaction processing, pulling them away from all the 700 odd branches that we operate, such that the unit cost of processing transactions in the long run goes down. We think this could be very significant and major for us, given the number of branches that we have. Indeed, in the second phase, our plan is to pull transaction processing from all our African subsidiaries again into the same hub and basically reduce our overall cost of transaction processing. So these efforts, in terms of dealing with that cost, this is also one key area where we have had personnel changes. We are bringing in a new executive to take charge of technology and services, again, from a best-in-class type institution. And part of the mandate of the new executive in charge of technology and services is to drive this centralization of transaction processing, also drive the digitalization of transaction processing. And we think over the next 2 years, this will contribute significantly into reducing our overall cost of operations.
Can we take the next question, please?
Could the last question on remediation, in terms of target for the year?
I don't have specific targets over the top of my head, but the key thing for us is that it's one of the focal points of our current year priority. Indeed, I think it's in top two in terms of priority, and that gives you an idea of how much attention is being devoted into this. I don't have the specific target with me here, but the target is very key. And our goal at the end of the day is to remediate and recover as much as possible what we have in the NPL portfolio today.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Our next question now comes from Kasu Makuru of Exotix Capital. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Look, I hope you can hear me well. My first question is on the retained earnings. I saw retained earnings increased by about 52 billion naira. Where is that coming from? Is that coming from the statutory credit risk reserve? If so, can you give us a little explanation as to why that's increasing? Is there a discrepancy between IFRS and the prudential requirements for provision? First question. Second question is, how come collateral didn't increase? Since you were having trouble with some of the loans, why wouldn't you have used the opportunity to increase the collateral on these loans, at least ask the borrowers to apply more collateral? And then thirdly, unfortunately, I've been around a long, long time, and we've heard several reiterations of improvement in risk at First Bank. And actually, for a long time, you had probably one of the best risk officers, if you ask me. Why this time another change, and why should the market believe that this time it's going to be very different, or you're going to get it absolutely right? Why this time round? Where should the confidence come from the market? And then, sorry, one last question is, you currently have a 37% coverage on your NPL. Why did you decide to stop at that level? And why should the market have comfort that that is indeed sufficient? You know, personally, I think investors should always be pricing in 100% coverage. If they do that, your CAR ratio drops to 11%, which means you're below the minimum requirements of an important institution. So why should we be so comfortable about that this 37% coverage is actually enough for First Bank going forward? Thank you.
Thank you for your question. Let me try to answer them one after the other. You're absolutely right. The bulk of the increase in retained earnings came from the reduction in statutory credit reserves. I had earlier on explained this, that typically while you have statutory credit reserve is when there is a misalignment or lack of alignment between the provision required under IFRS and that what is required under the prudential guidelines as issued by the central bank. What you had, or what we had in 2015, was a situation where there was a near perfect alignment between the number that was thrown up by these two different frameworks. And given the fact that we report under IFRS, we are obligated to charge the provisions that we needed to take under IFRS to our profit and loss account. So we took 100% of what we needed to do to our profit and loss account. And that approximates the level of impairment that is also required under the central bank prudential guidelines. So invariably, the balance that was outstanding in statutory credit reserves was no longer required, and it became a bona fide part of retained earnings. And that was it, you know. So this was clear. In terms of, if I go back to the...
Could I ask a follow-on question on that?
Yes, please.
So if there's a perfect alignment, and we understand prudential guidelines are very straightforward in terms of timing and required provisioning. So can you tell us where we are on the timing and required provisioning? Because therefore we should be seeing a step up. If there's no recovery by year end of this year, we should have 100% coverage. Isn't that correct, sir?
Again, it's not very mechanical the way you put it, but invariably that's a very simplistic approach to looking at it. PBM prudential guidelines also recognize certain credit risk mitigation techniques, especially when they are in the course of realization. So it's not a very direct translation the way you put it. I think what is more important is for us to focus on what we need to do in terms of remediation, in terms of recovery, to ensure that the loans that we put under our NPL portfolio, we work assiduously to ensure that a bigger chunk of what we have there are remediated. But let me take you to go straight to what I would consider the most significant question you've asked, which is around what has changed, what will change, and why should the investing public believe the changes that we're making around our risk management will work. Again, I go back to the basics. We emphasize that for the first time, we are doing a wholesale review of the credit risk management system. We are looking at people, we are looking at policy, we are looking at processes, and over and above that, we are deploying technology to drive the monitoring and the analytic process. That's number one. Number two, we also have in the team, over and above the team, the people in risk, people with significant risk management capability. I've mentioned that. We also mentioned earlier on that in structuring the leadership team, part of what we also look for are people with capability. So part of the reason why we brought in the executive director, the new executive director in charge of corporate banking, is essentially to deal with customer acquisition, customer profiling, deal structuring, and ensuring also that we structure our corporate banking transactions going forward the way it's meant to be structured, where you basically structure, you hold a percentage, and you distribute. But for you to be able to do this, the transaction needs to be structured properly in a way and manner that allows for it to be distributed. So we're looking at it and I'm convinced as the leader of the team, as the CEO, again, I do have background in risk, that we are and we can pull it off and embed a new risk culture within the bank that ensures that we operate at the right level. I also mentioned something around what we are doing. We mentioned just now that we are bringing in the new executive in charge of technology and services. Again, it's a whole part of building a leadership team that has the right skill set that complements each other. And the person we are bringing in into technology and services also has significant experience in operational risk management, and that also contributes to the entire reinforcing the entire control environment within the bank. We believe the market should give this current management the opportunity to do this wholesale review and embed a new credit culture within the institution. We are certain that we'll get it right and we will break the cycle of the bank losing significant amount of money on account of bad credit.
Thanks.
Another question, please.
There are no further questions at this time, so I would now like to hand the call back to Mr. UK Eke for any closing remarks. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Just a quick closing remark, and that's to emphasize that this group remains very resilient, and obviously you will agree that the fundamentals remain very strong, perhaps stronger than ever before. We do believe that the stock is trading far less than its intrinsic value, and what is even more important to us is that we've got a new management that has the desire and surely, certainly, the capacity to deliver on the numbers we have projected. So I'd like to thank you sincerely for your participation, and we'll see you at our next call. Thank you.
Thank you. This now concludes the FBN Holdings Full Year 2015 Financial Results Call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.